Hey everybody, this is Ferg from the Atari 2600 Game by Game Podcast, and you're listening to Throwback Reviews with your hosts Sean and Rob, part of ThrowbackNetwork.net. Have you played Atari today?
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 31, and on tonight's show, we'll be talking about the 1987 film Summer School. But before we get into that, let me go around and see who I have with me. As usual, Rob Flack O'Hara. What's going on, Rob?
Man, I am great tonight, and not because of this movie, but because I go on vacation tomorrow. We have our tickets. We're flying to California. We are going to Disneyland for the first time. My wife has all these goofy things planned. We're going to go to some museums. We're going to go to the Jelly Belly Museum. We're going to go see how they made jelly bellies. And then we're driving up to the Redwoods. And the big thing for me is we're going to Steve Sansweet's private Star Wars collection, which is
Rancho Obi-Wan.
That's it. Yeah, we got tickets and we have a 2-hour private tour. So I'm packing my Star Wars shirt and probably my Boba Fett hat. I think that will impress him. I don't know why I would want to impress a Star Wars guy, but
he is a cool guy though. Steve Sansweet. He's a pretty down to earth guy, or he seems to be.
I know a little bit about him, just from reading and stuff online, you know, and, I did post something on Facebook one time and he liked it. So I feel like we're kind of like tight now.
You're connected.
Right. So yeah. So I am in a great mood. I've got, everything packed up and we're just going to wait around the house tomorrow. And tomorrow afternoon, we are out the door.
That's awesome. And you're flying this time, right?
I am flying. So I have my, my iPod, actually it's my phone, my headphones. I have all the things that will keep me comfortable. I have my little pillow. I have my little security. It's not a security blanket. It's a hoodie, but it's giant. It's like a blanket. And I have my, security Xanax, which I plan on taking plenty of on the flight. So that'll be good times for everybody.
What were those blankets that had the hoods on? I think they were back the early 90s, the Snuggies.
They're not early 90s. There's one in my living room right now. It's a Chicago Bears and it has with the sleeves on it and everything.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally have one.
That's great.
I love it.
Well, I hope you have a good time. I'm sure we'll be seeing some pictures on Facebook.
And, oh yeah. Yeah. Especially when I get to Star Wars land.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, also join us again from Branded in the 80s and the Cult Film Club podcast, Mr. Sean Robert. What's going on, Sean?
Hey guys, I'm doing pretty good tonight.
Thanks for coming back with us.
Oh yeah, no, it was my pleasure. I had a great conversation last time, so.
Well, I had read that this is a movie that you watched quite often.
Yeah, this was definitely something that I overdosed on a little bit as a youngster.
And was this an HBO movie for you? Because it seems to be the running thing. Every movie we've done now, I keep saying it's like, oh yeah, I saw it on HBO.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I taped this off of HBO, and then I don't know how many times I actually watched it on HBO. I think because I had this on like a VHS. Like again, I taped it off of TV, so I ran that tape into the ground until it stopped working.
It's funny you say about the VHS. When we were out, my wife and I were out. We went to a couple antique stores yesterday, and I picked up Back to the Future trilogy on VHS. I have like a DVD box set. I didn't need it on VHS, but I don't know, man. I was like, why are you getting that? I'm like, cause I don't know why. I'm going to put it on the shelf. Why not? It was $3.
I have piles of things that I don't know why I bought them. So
tell me it was a good choice, right? $3.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, is it full screen or is it letterbox or,
you know, I don't even know, man. It's still in the bag at the, put right in the basement.
You know, I bought the first DVDs that came out of Back to the Future, and I guess they were like cropped incorrectly or something. And so then they mailed out a coupon, and it said if you bought, it was like if you signed up for the pre-release or pre-ordered it and then you got it, they're not right. And so I got a coupon in the mail, and it said, if you did the pre-order, you can send them back and we'll send you the correct ones. And I'm like, no way. These are going to be totally collector items. And so now I have poorly cropped versions of those movies in my, media closet. I don't know why I did that.
Well, that's funny because there was actually two copies of the original Back to the Future, and the cases were just slightly different. So I guess I should have picked them both up, huh?
You gotta collect them all.
Yeah, my rule. VHS are like Pokemon. Yeah,
I could not believe all the. I guess I just didn't realize how out of date VHS tapes were. I mean, every store we went to, they would just have this huge section of VHS tapes, and every store had at least one box set of Titanic. So that was like every time we go to a new store, I had to look through and make sure, see if I could find Titanic.
I have three or four thrift stores that I hit regularly, and they all have giant, and actually most of them have, two VHS, sections. They have the movies that were store bought, you know, and then there's that other area of like weird stuff that people recorded off of TV, which I've thought about doing that because I think maybe there's cool commercials in there or something, you know?
That's what I was thinking. That's probably what would get me more interested to see. Yeah, you know, I'm sure they're all scribbled on there.
Yeah, but you see stuff, it'll be like, I saw one, I'm not kidding, and it said Jody's Home Movies. And I'm all like, oh, that's so weird. Like, how creepy is that? I would have bought that one. Because the thing is, at some point, you got to go to the checkout thing. And even if you hide it in some other stuff, she's like, okay, here's a broken tennis racket, boop, you know. And here's, you know, some roller skates that are size 3, boop, you know. And here's Jody's Home Movies. And there's going to be that awkward moment where she looks at you and you're like, just leave me and Jody out of this. Just give me and Jody a chance, you know.
Can you just put it in the bag, please?
That should be like a John Cougar Mellencamp song. It's like me and Jody's Home Movies.
Sean, do you have like a bunch of old VHS tapes with all commercials and stuff like that on it?
Unfortunately not. Like all the stuff that I had taped off of TV, I tried to like outsmart that back in the day where I'd like pause when I was recording to try to edit out the commercials.
Yeah.
I totally regret.
Yeah. Yeah.
The time I took doing that. That's probably like the best part of those tapes.
I know. That's what I was going to say. Wouldn't you rather have the opposite now? Like one where you had taken out all the shows.
Exactly.
And just had the commercials. That'd be great.
My mother has a bunch of tapes still. That are from, I think a lot of them, majority of them are probably HBO, but there are definitely some on there that are from regular TV, you know, the some of the three major networks or stuff like that. So one of these days I'll probably grab them and check them out. So
if nothing else, maybe you'll get that sweet HBO feature presentation opening, the one that kind of goes through the neighborhood.
I love that, man. That is the best. Yeah, and I remember watching like the making of it too. Do you remember that when they had a special? It was like the making of that intro and they showed the models and everything. It was really cool.
I have, I just found a tape the other day. And it has the, maybe it's the newer HBO opening, but it's where you fly inside the O.
Yeah.
Of HBO and it looks like lasers and then you fly out or whatever. And it was, I want to say the tape has, it says like what movies are playing that night. And it was like 7 o'clock, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, 9 o'clock, Red Dawn. And I think I just put the tape in, hit record. I'm like, there's your show right there, folks.
That is an amazing double feature.
That's got something for everybody in it.
Wow. Yeah. Well, why don't we, get on with our feature tonight, Summer School. Rob, did you see this one? Was it?
I think I'm odd man out on this show. I have never seen this movie. I had never heard of this movie. What does I forgot the Mark? What's his name? The lead actor?
Mark Harmon.
Yeah, I don't know Mark Harmon. I don't know any. I mean, I recognized a few people in it, obviously, and we'll talk about them. But this movie just never even heard of it. I swore I thought you were thinking of Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised that you had never seen it. But then when I saw in the document today that you hadn't even heard of it, I was like, what? How could you not have heard of this movie?
Yeah, I don't know. I just missed this one somehow.
And Mark Harmon, that was actually, he was the reason I thought of us a couple weeks ago to do this movie. I'll talk about that when we kind of go through the rest of the cast. But why don't you, Rob, why don't you go ahead? We're kind of going to change up our summary, the way we do it. Just because I know we do tend to kind of, when we talk about these movies, sometimes we kind of jump around and.
Right. And, you know, we've heard that, I mean, there's some people that may have, like me, had never seen this movie. So instead of just kind of jumping in and jumping around on scenes, we thought, you know what, maybe, you know, we'd give a 3 or 4 minute little summary just to start to finish of the movie. And we're not going to walk you through every part of it, but just to give you, you know, what the movie's about. And, so anyway, we'll get started with that. So this will be a couple minutes here. Summer school begins on the last day of school at Oceanfront High School in Los Angeles, California. Mr. Freddie Shoup, a high school coach and teacher, has plans to go on vacation to Hawaii with his girlfriend Kim until the teacher who is supposed to teach summer school wins the lottery. And with no one else left to teach summer school and Shoup up for tenure, he gets stuck teaching remedial English for 6 weeks to a bunch of delinquent students. At first, Shoup does not take his responsibility very seriously, and instead he takes his students on multiple field trips. He attempts to get some assistance from another summer school teacher, Miss Robin Elizabeth Bishop, who is teaching in the room next to his, but eventually he gives up on the students. Unfortunately, he gets caught taking the kids on these field trips, and the vice principal threatens to fire him before he gets his tenure. So Shoup buckles down and commits to helping the kids pass the test. Now, unfortunately for Shoup, none of the kids really have any interest in passing this test, so instead they strike a deal, and if he'll grant each kid a wish, they will do their best to pass the exam. Now, instead of doing their best, the kids proceed to pretty much take advantage of Shoup's deal. One student wrecks his car when he borrows it. Another student sets fire to his couch during a party that Shoup lets him have at his house. And then there's a 16-year-old girl who actually moves in with Shoup. So all of this comes to a head when Shoup basically takes the blame for two of his 15-year-old students who are caught drinking alcohol on the beach, and Shoup ends up getting arrested. So he goes to court. Ultimately, the charges are dropped. But after the vice principal threatens to fire him, he finds out about this, and the kids return with even more demands, Shoup quits. So without Shoup to teach summer school, the vice principal begins to teach the class, but the students drive him off. Then a substitute teacher comes in, and she too is driven off by a gruesome prank that I'm sure we'll be talking about. Eventually, the kids find Shoup on the beach and ask him to return, and he agrees to come back if they will agree to try and pass the test. So we'll fast forward to the end of the film. All the kids do take the test. Afterwards, we learn that the average test score was failing, and the vice principal recommends to the principal that Shoup be fired. However, the students and their parents show up in support of Shoup, and we learn that some of the students did pass, and the ones who didn't pass greatly improved their scores. So, in the end, Shoup is not fired. He does receive his tenure. He finally wins over the heart of Miss Robin Elizabeth Bishop, the teacher next door, and the two of them end up rolling around on the beach and kissing. What do you think of that? You know what I just realized I didn't mention in this is Shoup's dog, which I don't know how big of a part Shoup's dog has in this movie, but it's big enough to be the only other person on the cover originally. It's very odd.
Dude, that's Wonder Mutt you're talking about.
Wonder Mutt, <It's> yes. Wonder Mutt. Yeah, the ending that was like a From Here to Eternity type people have seen that, the black and white movie when they're making out on the beach and the water's coming all over.
Right. And then this turns into a creepy three-way makeout as the dog gets to slip his tongue in between the two of them, which is a very odd.
Well, there's a part too where he's sitting on his porch looking at the waves coming in. And he's eating, dipping his finger in peanut butter and then dips into jelly. He eats a little, then he feeds the dog and then he licks whatever the dog didn't get.
Yeah, I love that, the ghetto peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah. So why don't we, we'll just quickly go through the cast here, and then we can start talking about some of our favorite scenes. But this was directed by Carl Reiner, who was the teacher who won the lottery and basically told him, screw you, I quit. I'm not teaching summer school. That was really funny. Mark Harmon, as you said, he plays Freddie Shoup. Rob, you have on here. He was People Magazine's 1986 Sexiest Man Alive.
Isn't that amazing? And married to Pam Dauber. So I was like, Mork wow. And Mindy fame. Exactly. I'm like a little Mork and Mindy throw in here. Greatest Man and People Magazine. And then I think Sean, I think he showed up on one of your favorite shows. Which is not Murder, She Wrote, for a change.
I should have looked. I bet you he did. And I will look at during the show, but I bet you he did make a cameo on there. He was on Battle of the Network Stars seasons, 1981 to 82. They would do two, shows a year, and, he was on there and, excuse me. I think they said he was a quarterback for UCLA or something like that. So, he was definitely a pretty awesome athlete on that show. And I watched that show over and over. It's on my netbook when I'm at work and I have nothing else to watch. I always go back to the, Battle of the Network Stars, and hopefully we can figure out how to incorporate it into a show. He plays Shoop. We have Christy Alley of Cheers fame. Look Who's Talking, Star Trek II, I guess. and Robin Thomas Grossman as the Vice Principal Gills.
Yeah, I watched and I put a link, and we can put this link in the show notes if you want. There's an extra on the DVD about the making of this movie and this guy, Grossman, he says that he gets recognized all the time from this
really?
Role. Yeah, like people come up to him.
What did you look and see what else he was in? Because I didn't notice him from anything else.
I didn't.
Sean, do you know of him from anything else?
No, I pretty much just know him from this, honestly. Yeah. Which is probably why he gets recognized for this movie so much.
Yeah. Right, yeah. You get recognized for the only thing you did. So let's run through. I want to run through some of the supporting cast, and that's the students that appear. And conveniently, as often was the case in 80s movies, every student pretty much has one trait. So it's very easy to track who is who. And I'm trying to look through maybe we'll do some of the more famous ones. But we had Courtney Thorne Smith. She plays Pam, and she's the surfer girl. And I guess I knew her from According to Jim. She's Jim's wife, but I guess she was also on Melrose Place. I was not a huge Melrose
Place fan.
That's
where I knew her from.
Sean, or either Sean, both Seans, I should say, feel free to jump in. Otherwise, I'm just going to kind of run through these. You had Patrick Labiato. Is that right? I don't know. Labiorto?
Oh, Labiato.
Okay. He's the football jock. And I guess he was on Jag for a long time, actually.
Yeah.
Then you have our two, horror fans / stoner guys. They are the comic relief, in the class. One is, Dean Cameron, and in the movie he plays Chainsaw. He's a huge fan of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And the other guy is, his name is Gary. He's Dave in the movie. His real name is Gary Riley. What do you guys think about these two?
I personally love Dean Cameron, though it always surprises me. Like, I always feel like I've seen him in like 6 million things, but it's pretty much just in two movies for me. It's this and a crazy movie called Rockula, where he plays like a vampire rock star in the modern world. But he's got that, I don't know, there's something about him where he's got that face or whatever. He feels like he was in like a ton of 80s movies, but totally not.
Yeah, he does. You're right. He feels like he should be.
Right. And I mean, my first, you know, not having seen this before, my first thing watching this is I thought, are these guys about 25? Yeah. And they are. I think he is close to 25 in this movie. So,
the other one that the pregnant girl, Shawnee Smith.
Yes.
I had recognized her from, I believe it was the Saw movies.
Yeah, she's in Saw 1, Saw 2, and one of the Nightmare on Elm Streets. I think four or five. I think it's four. We got a pregnant girl. We have a Larry, who is he's a nighttime male stripper.
Yeah.
This is just a great collection. You can see why every one of these kids are in summer school.
Exactly.
Except for the nerd guy, and we'll talk about him. We have the nerd, Alan, who's played by Richard Steven Horvitz, and he has been in a few things, but apparently he went way big into voice acting, and immediately when he started talking, I was like, that's Invader Zim. I knew immediately that was him. So that's, I think I know him more for his voice work. Did you guys know anything else that he was in?
No, you pretty much nailed the two that I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's see. We have the surfer girl, the football guy, the horror guys, the, we skipped over, Denise, the, dyslexic Hispanic mean girl. That's her role. Let's see who else.
The exchange student.
And the exchange student. Let's Fabiana. Talk about the exchange student.
Yeah. I knew I had recognized her from something. She was, a lot of vagina. And Austin Powers.
Yeah.
And that's the only other thing.
I thought, you know, normally on these teen movies, I like to poke a little fun at how much older they are, you know. I don't know how old she was, but she was not old enough for me to feel comfortable looking at her in a bikini when they went to the beach. I did feel dirty about that. I'll just say that.
So this is the unfortunate part about catching up with this movie, like, now. Cause, you know, like, when I caught it, I was 10, so I felt perfectly fine oogling.
Right. She was older than you. Now she's like somebody that, you know, I mean, like, if they have bring your kid to work day, it's somebody that a coworker would bring to work, you know, so I definitely did feel a little icky. And there are multiple things about this movie that made me feel icky. So I hope we get to all of those. And then finally we have somebody that I would love to discuss later on, Jerome Watkins, who is a big, tall, black guy. I don't know if he's supposed to be a football player, if he's supposed to be kind of a tough guy. I don't know. When he's introduced to Shoop and everyone else, he asks if he can go to the bathroom, and then he returns 6 weeks later. So... Maybe you guys, this is what I thought at first when I watched this. I was like, did like a test group say, you know, we need a black person, like there's nobody black in this movie, and so they went back and shot this scene and stuck it back in and then turned it into a joke? Or I honestly didn't know. That was like, this is one of the many weird things about this film. Did you guys think that was funny, or did you think it was weird?
I thought it was funny too, but then I can like relate to this because when I went to college, I went to community college for a couple of years and I was kind of this guy. Like I had like a full-time job on the side and the last thing I wanted to do at nights was, you know, or like actually I work nights. The last thing I wanted to do when I got off in the morning was go to college. So I basically blew off college. I went to like orientation, sat down, met the teachers and then came back for the finals. And, you know, cause I was just taking some basic college classes. So it's like, I feel like I was this guy for a couple of years.
You just come in with a bathroom pass on the last day.
Right. And just take the final, pass it, just get the hell out of there.
I did not recognize this guy from anywhere else, but when I looked him up on IMDb, the one that made me laugh is it says dumb football player who is dead in Beetlejuice. And you know the scene where they're all waiting to go in to talk to their caseworker and he's like, what's the score, coach? You know,
coach, I don't think we made it through that crash.
So that made me laugh that it was that guy. My only observation, other than that about these people is, number one, well, obviously, like we said, they're all very convenient stereotypes, which you're going to get in a movie like this. Especially if you have a movie where you have more than a couple of people, you have to make sure the people, you can't put eight girls that all look alike because nobody will be able to keep track of them. So I thought they did do a good job of that. The other thing I thought was funny, or that jumped out at me is I don't think any of these people would be friends in real life. I mean, they immediately clicked because they're in summer school. I could tell you from school functions I went to like this, it was not like this for me. I was definitely the nerdy guy that was in the back and nobody was like, okay, we'll invite you to the party. That did not happen in my world.
Except for the two guys that shared a brain.
Right, Chainsaw and Dave. Dave. Yeah. Yeah, I think this is this is sort of like a legacy of the John Hughes movies. Cause they kind of like, you know, he kind of like struck that mold as far as like putting a bunch of mismatched kids together that all kind of end up becoming great friends and all this stuff. And I think at some point in the later 80s, it just became assumed that, yeah, I guess if you have a bunch of misfits left over, it doesn't matter even if they're in like a completely different cliques. They're just, you know, they're just going to fit together.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at 16 Candles or a Breakfast Club or something like that, you know, in the end, everybody's a buddy and everybody's pals, you know. Yeah. I don't know. Most of them I didn't think were very likable. So I don't know. I'm not going to be down on this movie. I don't want you to think I'm down on the movie, but like I said, coming into it cold, there's just some weird things about this movie.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, that is harder. I mean, for someone who hasn't seen it.
Yeah.
And it's from 87.
And I did want to point out, you know, I loved, having the last show we had when we had Sean Robert come on. So I was excited when you told me we're going to have Sean Robert come on. And I'm like, this is awesome. And you said, you know, I got this movie. And so I look it up because I'm like, well, when you said this movie, I thought surely this would have to been the best movie of 1987. But if we're not doing that, it's got to be like the second best movie because Sean's a great guest. We don't want to waste him on something, but this is the 32nd top earner of 1987. So I feel like we can have Robert back on 31 more times. I feel like we could work our way back up the ladder from this one. And it did earn, well, it earned $35 million. So it couldn't, I mean, I can't imagine that this had a budget of more than about $15 a person. I mean, everything was shot. I mean, most of it shot either in one set or outdoors, you know, so it doesn't seem like it could be that expensive.
No, most of the budget goes to Carl Reiner and Mark Harmon's salaries, I'd have to assume.
Yeah.
That's probably a safe bet. So,
well, what about Kirstie Alley at this point?
She's nobody. She's nobody.
Had she been on Cheers yet?
Maybe
she had just started on Cheers or something.
Maybe
like that.
So. Because I know her only movie thing before this that's anything really is Star Trek II, and she's definitely not a draw in Star Trek II. And this is also, I think, the first time where we kind of see her, they're moving her into this comedy kind of thing, because after this is where you get the Look Who's Talking and stuff like that. I can't imagine she pulled in seven figures. I don't know, maybe. But anyway, I went through the summary. You guys have basically heard what the movie's about. So now I want you guys, to talk, just to pull some scenes out and we can talk about that.
You had mentioned in the summary that they each, when they made their agreement and they all had, what was it, their wishes or whatever that they mm-hmm. wanted. And, we had the surfer girl. I forget her name now, but,
Pam.
She, you know, and she tells him, I'm going to wait. You know, when I'm ready to give you my request, I will. And then she ends up on his front step the one day. And he's the beach guy, the coach. So he's pretty laid back and he ends up letting her stay at his house. It just seemed really, really odd. And then when he comes home that one time, was it just me or she's like, oh, hey, hon, dinner's almost ready or something.
Right,
like that.
Yeah, she's cooking it. Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, it's weird, definitely. But at the same time, I kind of like it. It's a little bit refreshing because typically with these movies, what you get is you get like the 16-year-old guy that's, you know, that's like the coming of age story and he's looking to, you know, find a girl or whatever and usually ends up like coming across an older lady that kind of teaches him the ways of the world or whatnot. And, you know, it's very rarely that you kind of see it, you know, flipped on its head where it's the older guy and a younger girl or whatever, where the younger girl is the one that's sort of pushing the relationship or whatever. So I always thought that was kind of interesting that it was a little bit different. It's not quite in the direction right. that you expect.
Yeah. And Shoop is such a doofus that he doesn't realize that she has these intentions or whatever. He's like, hey man, she needs a place to crash. She's, you know, she is here in this nightgown looking, or one of my shirts. I think she's wearing one of his shirts and cooking breakfast or whatever. And then she's like, well, or cooking dinner. And then she says, well, you know, we could talk about this over breakfast. And I'm like, this is bizarre, you know, so
well,
this
he doesn't realize it till Robin points it out.
Right. Yeah. Kirstie Alley comes, she stops by. Right. And then she's like, I hope having your own housemaid is worth whatever damage you're doing to this girl, which is such a bitchy line.
Well, the cat claws came out too. Cause Pam's like, you know, look, I didn't make enough dinner for three. I'm like, damn.
The whole thing cracked me up. And then I thought, you know, obviously any kind of movie like this, especially 80s type, you know, and a teen comedy or whatever you want to classify this as, you know, you have to suspend a certain amount of belief. But I thought, wouldn't in real life Kirstie Alley immediately go and call the authorities and be like, wow, there's a summer school teacher who has shacked up with a 16-year-old student who's cooking bacon right now?
Yeah. Well, again, this is one of the weird things about this movie. Like you said, like, not only do all these characters have like a very specific character archetype or whatever, but all of them have like a really kind of serious issue going on. So be it, you know, a 16-year-old girl that's obviously homeless or homeless light and, you know, looking to hook up with an older teacher. You've got Chainsaw and Dave that are, you know, 17-year-old alcoholics, you know,
no. 15-year-old. Right, because he borrows Shoop's car to go try to take his driving test.
That's right.
Yeah, it's even, because I thought the same thing. I'm like, well, it's not that bad. And then when he goes to get the driving test, I'm like, oh my God. But yeah, go ahead. Because, I mean, when you run down this list, they're not just people that are like, you know, oh, my problem is, you know, Oh, people make fun of me. My problem is I am a nighttime gigolo.
No, exactly, right? You've got a guy who doesn't know the boundaries of sex stuff, working in sex clubs as an underage guy. You've got a girl who's already pregnant and still in high school. You've got, you know, the dyslexic girl that, you know, has gotten all the way through high school and can't read, which is, it's a pretty serious deal going on. So it's like everyone has like a, for the most part, I mean, I don't think the football player has anything too bad going on.
No. And the nerd guy.
Yeah, the nerd guy is just unfortunate because he's just kind of sheltered, I guess. But
right. I mean, that I think he's in the best position. I mean, he waits 20 years. He's making, you know, six figures in IT. So he's exactly. Well, as long as he passes remedial English, I guess. So
yeah. Well, he didn't do too bad. I think he got a 73.
He did. Yeah, he was one of the ones that passed at the end. So, and speaking of the pregnant girl, and I don't have a lot to say about this scene, again, this is just coming in with fresh eyes. Shoop decides instead of teaching remedial English, he's just going to blow this whole thing off, and so he decides to take these kids on field trips. And so the next scene is him with all the students driving go-karts around, and the first shot is of the pregnant girl driving a go-kart around. I thought, this is bad news, Shoop. Yep. Shoop is not the most responsible summer school teacher of all time. Let's just say that.
Well, one of the things that you pointed out to me the other day when we were talking, Rob, about Pam was, and I never noticed this, but I was watching for it, is when she pats her baby belly, you can hear like a ball in there. Like, you know, right. those like kind of those red or maroonish balls you use in gym, like, in dodgeball. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like one of those, like you just totally hear the right. Thum, thum, thum.
Okay, so I got to tell you, I think I found something in this movie that I didn't find anything about this online. I mean, I think I'm the guy that actually discovered this. When she hits her belly, you know, talking about the baby, you can hear that it's a ball in there, right? After she gives birth at the end of the movie, we've just spoiled the movie. That's the big, I think this movie is spoiled. The last scene where they're on the beach, and she's telling everybody that she gave it up for adoption. Right next to her, there's like a little stand, and right next to her on the stand is a volleyball. I'm like, that's totally the baby. That has to be. Like, you know, I'm like, I bet they put that in there as a joke. I bet you money that volleyball right there was her baby. I'm that's sure awesome. Of it. I cannot find anything about that online. But
I think you're the only one to catch that.
Because there's the thing is there's no, I mean, it's all these people and then a volleyball. There's no reason. And it's almost like they put it on a stand so you would see it right there.
Yep. Yeah. If you ever come across Shawnee Smith at like a con signing autographs or something like that, that is the question to ask.
I'll have her sign a volleyball. I'm like, this is your baby. You gave it up.
I adopted
your baby. Yeah.
Sean, did you notice it at all or no? I wouldn't have unless Rob pointed it out.
No, and I actually, I'm kind of dying to go back and rewatch it again, even though I just watched it yesterday.
So what else? We talked, the one scene I liked is where, you know, obviously the kids are doing reports, you know, to work on their English skills, and Shoup has them doing some sort of, you know, research report on a person or whatever. And we have Chainsaw and Dave, and they do a report on Rick Baker, who we just talked about in a previous episode. I love Rick Baker. He's like one of the, you know, special effects heroes of mine. So I really did like that scene. And of course we do, maybe you guys want to talk about, there are a couple of scenes in this movie where, obviously they're bigger than just casual fans of Rick Baker's work, that they actually, do some makeup work in this movie.
Well, yeah, you got the amazing, scene in the petting zoo where they, they decide to stage an attack of some killer rabbits.
Right. So they have like stuffed rabbits, and they run around screaming, and they take everybody off guard, and then they start ripping flesh off their face. Which I love this scene. I mean, this is like, I knew those guys in school. I'm sure we all knew those guys that would do something gross, you know, just to get a rise out of people. And so this scene really did have that. I mean, maybe obviously it's to the nth degree because it's, you know, Hollywood, it's a movie, but I thought this is something that I could relate to.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things. And it's, you know, it potentially an homage to Monty Python and the Holy Grail or Night of the Lepus or something like that, which you gotta love.
Yeah, I thought the same thing with they were attacked by creatures most foul.
Yeah. And what I love about Chainsaw and Dave is that, you know, they come across to me. I mean, I don't know about the underage drinking part of that, because I never did that when I was younger, but is the fact that it's like, I grew up with the same kind of thing, inundated and like obsessing over horror movies and stuff like that. And I, you know, I was reading Fangoria all the time. And, you know, I could see like that was one of the things that I wanted to do, was, you know, that was that next step, is I wanted to get into the special effects makeup and mm-hmm. learn how to make my own gore and stuff like that. And I think that they pretty much nailed what those kids were like. I knew so many other kids that were just like Chainsaw and Dave. And those are the people I think that grew up to be like Eli Roth and stuff like that, making their own crazy horror films, just taking it to a much crazier, disgusting, disturbing level and everything. But I don't know. I love that made it into a movie in the 80s. Like, you know, it's like you could already see the effect of like the Nightmare on Elm Street movies and the Friday the 13th and stuff like that in pop culture.
Yeah. These in real life, these guys somewhere have a horror blog, you know what I mean? Or a podcast or something. And they are, I mean, they're still, obviously they were very, you know, into that whole scene back then. And yeah, like you said, I mean, I think everybody knew some kids that were like that.
And then, you know, going along with the whole rabbit attack thing, you have, like you talked about later, like after Mr. Shoup basically gives up on everyone and quits, and the assistant principal's got to hire a new substitute summer school teacher or whatever. He basically, makes a warning to them that if they do anything wrong that next day, they're going to regret it. And so, of course, that sets them off to do the ultimate gore prank, where they set up a bedlam gore scene in the,
Yeah, it's a slaughter. It's everybody. It's totally.
My favorite, of course, being the football player Kevin, who's torn in half. Or is it? No, it's the dancer. Sorry. It's
the dancer.
Torn in half and reaching in for his guts. And that's just, it's just
with
amazing.
With a pencil through his eyeball that's hanging.
Yep.
I like that, and the girl, the Pam, which she's got like that square.
Oh yeah, the metal disc in her mouth.
Yeah, what was in it? What was it supposed to be?
I think it was just supposed to be something like out of Hellraiser. They have characters in those movies that just kind of like random miscellaneous metal things stuck in their faces.
Okay. I love that scene, and my initial thought when I saw this is one thing that my mother used to always say to me, and now I say it all the time to my kids. I tell my kids all the time, you know, if you spend as much time working as you spend trying to get out of work, you wouldn't have this problem. You know, every time, I mean, my kids will spend 2 hours trying to find the right pencil, or the right pencil sharpener, or they don't like this kind of paper, you know, anything to get out if they would just do their homework. And so that's I don't know why it made me think of that, but I was like, you know, obviously these people, you know, if you get them into something that they're interested in, you know, obviously they had to put a lot of effort into this. So I thought, gosh, if they put that much effort into passing this English test, they could all get out of summer school. That's the parent in me. watching this film, I think.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, that's basically the takeaway in the end sequence. You know, it's like they kind of do that. That's kind of how they save the day. It, you know, it's like, look how much effort they put into all the crazy hijinks and everything that they did. When I saw my son actually studying, I cried.
That's a great quote. So let's see here. You guys have any other scenes you want to talk about?
Well, we have the dancer guy, he's sleeping through the entire movie. Every scene, he's in every scene, but he's always sleeping, whether it's,
I was waiting for the payoff. It's like every scene he's asleep and you don't know why yet. Maybe, and I'm like, of course, my head is so into, and I think the surfer girl wanting to shack up with Shoop has thrown me off. So he's sleeping and I'm like, it's because he has a night job because he's raising a baby or something. You know, I'm thinking it's something like really serious, or he hasn't been diagnosed with narcolepsy yet or something, but go ahead.
Right. And we find out because Shoop goes to a adult club, this is where we're introduced to
an adult club for women to go.
Yeah, basically like a Chippendales.
Yeah. Well, I got to ask you guys a question. I thought maybe I missed something, but this is where he discovers him. He has a little like a Lone Ranger mask on or something. And you know, he's doing some, he's cutting a rug out there, which was a little uncomfortable at work watching, hoping nobody's over my shoulder.
No, guys, this is totally research.
Yeah. Yeah. Magic Mike is next.
But Shoop is like, it's like he's trying to pick up the leftover horny old women. You know, he's like totally hitting on these broads, trying to talk with them and telling them he works for Playgirl magazine. And that's when the one lady's like, look, this is ladies' night. So my question to you guys, I didn't know if I missed him. I watched it today. Was he going there for that specific reason, do you think, to like be like, look, there's going to be a lot of like middle-aged women there. I'm going to try and score with one of them. Or when she said it's a ladies' night, was it like, do you think maybe 5 nights out of the week it's girls dancing, but he just happened to go on the wrong night?
I don't know. I didn't understand why. And I mean, thinking back, I didn't realize why he ended up there. But if he went to pick up the sloppy seconds or whatever, that's really creepy. I mean, that is like going to, you know, the Lamaze classes and hanging out like, hey, does anybody need a partner here? You know, I mean, it's just, that's dirty. And especially, I mean, he's not a bad looking dude, you know?
Yeah, he's just lonely. His girlfriend left and he can't score with the other teacher. So.
True. That is true. And he still has her picture.
Yeah.
But I think eventually Kirstie Alley, I'm sure, turned that down. Turned the picture over.
He had a line down, everything, trying to, you know, talk to him like he was from a magazine. And, that was what kind of threw me off was that scene. I was like, why is he there? And that's, you know, but then he is, I wouldn't say he was envious of the kid, but he's just like, man, this kid has got it going on, because the women that he's trying to pick up on are like, you know, they give him his number, give the kid his number. And he's what, 17, 16?
Yeah.
Let's say he's like 17 or something. Yeah, he's like a couple of years older than some of them. But yeah, he does get busted, right? His mom?
Later in the movie, we find out because he's wide awake in class, and he tells him he got fired because I think he was saying he was 21 or something. And he tells him that his mom was there with his aunt, and his aunt kissed him with tongue. That was great.
Of all the weird things that bothered me in the movie, for some reason that part didn't bother me, but now that you say it that way, it bothers me. But I don't know why. It just sounded, I don't know.
You know,
and maybe it's a double standard, and not to turn it real serious, but when it's the girl that moves in with a teacher, I'm like, that's terrible. But when it's the 17-year-old guy that's, you know, dancing and potentially scoring with older women, I'm like, hell yeah, dude, party on.
You know, this movie reminds me a lot of Caddyshack in a way. Like the script for Caddyshack is a much more serious movie. It's not this screwball comedy that it ended up being when they filmed it. So much of what happens, like, in Caddyshack is, like, ad-libbed and changed throughout the process. I think Brian Doyle Murphy's original script was a lot more serious, and it actually focused more on the caddies. I think this movie has that kind of feel to it, where it's like, I think the script was maybe intended to be slightly more serious and not necessarily as goofy, and then in the actual filmmaking process, they realized how ridiculous some of the stuff was, and they couldn't help but, you know, just kind of take it a little bit further. So it's like, it's weird that there's kind of like some dark, disturbing stuff hidden underneath, but at the end of the day, it really is kind of a feel-good, screwball kind of comedy of a movie.
Yeah, and you know, there are, and I mentioned this because they're all, it's almost jarring the way that they come across, but there are some moments where they, I noticed this right, like a lot of times in a scene, I'll look at like what's behind the principal actors, especially if it's like a poster or something, like, you know, it's intentionally in the shot. And the first scene where Shoop, is meeting the kids and the vice principal comes in to introduce him or whatever, there's a poster for Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, like right behind where he's standing. And I'm like, well, that's weird that they threw that in. And then there's the scene, you know, like I said, where the kids get busted with the alcohol and he's like, listen, this is no thing for kids to be doing. And drinking and driving is not a joke, you know, and there's just several things like that. So and you're right. There is like moral overtones in here, but it's like they turned up the comedy part instead, which makes those things seem out of place.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got to wonder how much that's the difference between Carl Reiner directing it and somebody else writing it and, you know, him putting it through his own filter. Mm-hmm. Cause I mean, this is the guy that brought us The Jerk and
right. Right. So. And that made me think too, that the other thing, and I do a lot of like, well, maybe this happened or what if, you know, but I thought, well, I wondered if, you know, they went back and they were like, well, you know, maybe to get funding, they said, we'll put some, you know, PSAs in here or, you know, maybe for a ratings thing or something. I don't know. Cause they did just feel out of place, you know?
Yeah.
Well, they did do a lot of product placement.
Oh my gosh. I wrote down so many. It was so obvious. I mean, it reminded me of, isn't it, you already mentioned Austin Powers once the show, but isn't there the Austin Powers episode or the movie where he's like, you know, randomly holding things up to the camera and.
Oh, that's like, Wayne's World.
Wayne's World. Yeah. God, that's right. That's right. And he's like, oh, what about a refreshing Dr. Pepper or whatever, you know? And I'm like, there's one scene where Kirstie Alley and Shoop are sitting there and they're like, discussing ways that they're going to teach these kids. And then she stops and she goes, would you like a Pop-Tart for breakfast? And he's like, no, thanks. I have a Wheat Thins or what, whatever it was, but it was like the actual name. So I was like, that was so weird. And then like in the next scene, he's wearing a Wheaties shirt. And it's just jarring as much. And I there was one scene where he's like sitting there holding a thing of Doritos and he's like, got it almost pushed towards the camera. Like I thought, was this originally in 3D? Like, is he trying to get that actually into the audience?
Well, when he came back to his house and Pam was waiting, he had just gone grocery shopping and you could see the Pop-Tarts were sticking out and he was eating constantly every scene. And he was like one of those people that like would take a bite and then would chew for like 3 minutes, the same bite constantly and talking and eating. I was getting hungry watching this movie.
I wonder if Mark Harmon's like, what's his name? Tony Soprano, where he like, he doesn't have a spit bucket. He totally goes, method on this. He eats everything.
All in.
Yep.
And you know, this movie did make me hungry, which is good because I was on Craigslist earlier and I'm advertising for a 16-year-old that wants to move in here and just cook food for me. I'm sure it'll go great. It'll be like a wacky comedy. I'm sure no one will think twice about it. It'll be perfectly normal.
Yeah, I think that'll go over perfectly.
So let's see. We talked about the weirdness, the awkwardness that was in there. You know, and one thing that struck me, this is just a random thought. And, as we're watching the movie, I was thinking of, oh God, I'm going to draw a blank. What's the Carpe Diem movie? You know, where he's teaching the kids and,
Dead Poets Society.
Yes. God, I just drew a blank on that. Dead Poets Society. I thought that's where this movie was going. I thought at some point These kids are like, this is the pregnant girl. This is the kid that needs driver's ed. This is, the kids that like horror movies. And at some point he comes in with lessons and he's like, I'm going to teach you English based off these things that you love. And so I thought that's where it was building to. And when that didn't happen, and then, you know, and then instead what the kids do is they come back and they go, you know what, teach, we want you to grant us some more wishes. So right off the bat, that made me hate all these children. I thought they're terrible people and I hope that they all fail. And the fact that I was like, this is a sign that I'm old, that I was looking forward to more teaching in this movie.
That's hilarious. Yeah, it's funny. This movie has that Bad News Bears kind of aesthetic. It's there's no, honestly, at the end of the day, there really is no lesson. It's these kids really don't better themselves all that much.
Right. I mean, some of the improvements are Chainsaw. I think he goes from a 20% to a 40 or something. Or
yeah, like it's a 6 to like a 53 or 59 because he has the largest jump.
That's right. Then there's the one girl, the Hispanic girl, and they're like, well, you have a zero because you skipped every test before. So yeah, you're right. I mean, there were some people that passed at the end. And then the highest score, I think I already mentioned, goes to the guy that was in the bathroom for 6 weeks.
Which comes again, in and makes. Yeah. I think that's that fire, like that final irony punch or whatever. It's like, not only did these kids, you know, they did better, but they didn't really succeed. But this dude who wasn't even here aced it.
So Rob, you would have preferred that he pulled some miracle and they all passed the test?
You know what? I was legitimately surprised. I was surprised because I thought maybe there would be like a extra credit. And I was like, God, I can't wait till they start diagramming sentences. This is going to be, you know, I went to school for journalism and stuff. So that's why I was like, oh, this is going to be great. And then there was no teaching. There was just Lamaze classes and people destroying his furniture, which I felt really bad for him about.
He did teach them to complain to large companies about their crappy products so they can get free sunglasses.
That's true. They got a case of sunglasses, and they're very 80s sunglasses. They're like weird angles and
the Venetian blind.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So, all right. So I got to ask you guys this. Who is hotter in this movie? Kirstie Alley or, and it's kind of icky because I guess she's supposed to be 16, but let's say she's 18, Courtney Thorne Smith in this movie.
I'm not a fan of Kirstie Alley, so.
Yeah. I like Kirstie Alley's eyes, but I'm actually going to go with Shawnee Smith.
Yeah.
Can I do it right?
Oh, yeah. She's cute. She's cute. And in school, I would have been like, you know what? She's already got one baby on the way, so that's who I got the best chance with.
There you go. Can't get her pregnant again.
Right. And plus, I mean, it's like, you know, we're not going to church. We're going somewhere else, baby. I thought Courtney Thorne Smith was super hot in this movie. I don't know what it was. I'm not into surfers. I mean, it wasn't that, but, and here's the thing about Kirstie Alley. You have the gift of knowing that in 20 years, she's going to be hawking Nutrisystem or whatever and have a reality show where she's drunk all the time and just eating and drinking, you know. So it's like you have that foresight to know that things are going to go bad for Kirstie Alley at some point. But
she
looked good. Yeah. And it's that very 80s kind of and it's not a perm, but, you know, just that curly hair.
Definitely.
But, yeah, no, I didn't even think of Shawnee Smith and – man, Robert grabs all the hotties.
I'm surprised nobody said the Italian exchange student, or maybe that just gets too icky.
Rob made it icky.
No, it
wouldn't have been.
In this movie, she doesn't play the character this way, but in real life, that girl's way too high maintenance.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I mean? And maybe you got a shot if, you know, she doesn't. She's just over in America for a little while and she doesn't know customs. And you're like, no, this is totally normal, baby. You know, you always pay for dinner. That's what we do in America. Maybe I just wrote her off because she's way out of my league. I think, middle-aged English teacher that has to teach summer school more in my league. underage pregnant girl way in my league. Oh, this is going downhill fast. Okay, so here's a question I wrote down for you guys, and I had a couple of questions, and I can go first if you want a minute to think about. But my first question for you guys is: in high school, did you ever have a coach for a teacher? And I did, and very specifically, I had one that I remember. And he was our sociology coach. I think this was, or a sociology teacher. I think he taught baseball. I'm not sure. It was a Coach Pierce. And, so of course I didn't play any sports or really watch sports in high school, but, everybody called this guy Coach Pierce, you know, and, I really only remember a couple of things about Coach Pierce. And one was, that he had a special pillow that he sat on in class. And I remember somebody asking him one time about his pillow, and he goes, "You know what? When you get older, hemorrhoids are not going to be so funny." He just starts yelling at this girl, you know? And so I remember that about Coach Pierce. And the other thing I remember about Coach Pierce is, this is 11th grade for us. And so we were, coming in, like, the guy that sat in front of me had a mohawk. And, this leather jacket that had the Misfits logo on the back. And all of us were like, we had just, you know, started discovering, we had already discovered like Motley Crue and Metallica. Now we were finding the bands that those bands listened to, you know, so now all of a sudden we're listening to DRI and, TSOL and stuff like that. So we're really starting to get, you know, and Slayer, of course. So Coach Pierce comes in one day and he's very serious and he's like, "Guys, I'm really worried about you." And so he has brought a TV. Remember when we were in school and you had the media cart and he wheels in the media cart. It's got the TV on it and the VCR underneath it, you know, and it was a 2-hour special. So we watched half of it one day and half of it the next day. And it was about basically how all the horrible things that were in heavy metal. And one of the things I remember is them talking about how horrible Jane's Addiction was. And none of us had ever heard of Jane's Addiction, but we went and bought it the next day. And it was like a total backfire. I mean, we found out about all these bands, you know, and I said Slayer. I don't think we did know about Slayer. And they were like, they have two albums, Rain and Blood and South of Heaven. And then they were playing it. We're like, "This rocks. Oh my God. Did you hear that?" And we went the next day. And I mean, there was a sound warehouse pretty close to my house. And we went there and we bought all these tapes and we were like, "Oh my God. Thank you, Coach Pierce." Like, you have really expanded our world, you know, and I'm sure he felt terrible about it, so that was really my only experience with a coach as a teacher.
So I had one, when I was in the 10th grade, 10th and 11th grade, there was actually two teachers. There was a coach and his wife. One taught physical science and one taught biology. And the weird thing about them, it was Coach Petty and Mrs. Petty, his wife. The weird thing about them was that the coach was like in his late 40s, early 50s. And his wife was like 23. And it was always weird because she was like the hot teacher that all the kids would always like stare at in class and everything. And like one day it clicked that like she went to this high school. He was teaching here. They hooked up and now they're married and that's weird. And they're both teaching me.
This is called Summer School Part 2.
Right, exactly.
With Shoop and Pam. Right.
This is Paul Nerminen of the Intellivisionaries podcast. And when I get tired of laughing at my co-hosts, well, actually, I never get tired of that. In any case, when I need my retro fix, I tune into Throwback Reviews on the Throwback Network.
So here's my other question for you that came up while I was watching this. My question is, have you guys ever found yourself in a position where you are being a buddy instead of being a responsible adult, you know? And this comes out in the film, you know, where Shoop is basically tasked with getting these kids to pass the English remediacy test. And he says, "You know what? Screw it. I don't want to be here. Y'all don't want to be here. Let's go on field trips instead." And he goes and does that. And I have done this a couple of times. And there's always been terrible we sold some of it, but one time is specifically, I was, a kid. I was 15, and in Oklahoma, you could get a motorcycle driver's license when you're 14. So I could legally drive, go anywhere I wanted. And, my buddy's parents said that some of their friends, so these are people I don't really know, but I know them through layers, or they know me through layers, basically, that they're looking for a babysitter. And they want somebody, that could come over and come over. It was like a Friday night or whatever. And I'm like, okay, I could do that, you know? So I drive my motorcycle over to these kids' house. It's two kids, and I don't remember. I mean, they're probably like 9 and 12, and I'm 15, you know? And so we're there, and, I'm like, all I want on earth is for these kids to like me. That's all. Like, I'm not responsible. I'm not like, I'm going to be their buddy. And I don't remember if we did anything in the beginning, but, I had cooked some TV dinners, and they were like, we don't like this or whatever. And I'm like, well, then throw it out, do whatever you want, you know? And they were like, well, we hate it. And I go, well, then it got to a point where I basically encouraged them to have a food fight. And I was like, well, just take it in the backyard, because I don't want to clean it up. And they went in the backyard, and they threw food everywhere at each other. And I ended up ordering a pizza. And then at one point, like I said, it's been a long time. The conversation of having a water balloon fight came up. And I was like, I'll just go get some water balloons. And I left. I went to the store and got water balloons. I left these children there at home. I came back, you know. Fortunately, they're not dead or anything. And so we have a water balloon fight, and their parents said, listen, we have to go to, it must have been a Saturday, because they said, we have to go to church early, so the kids have to be in bed by 9. And they had a Nintendo, and I didn't have one yet. And I was like, we are staying up all night and playing Nintendo. And it was in their room. And at one point, I think the younger one was like trying to go to sleep. And I'm like, shut up. I'm on World 4 2 on Super Mario Brothers. Don't, you know, just suck it up, you know? And I'm like, the minute your parents pull in the driveway, you guys have to act like you're asleep. And they're like, we will. We promise. We swear to God, Rob, we will not sell you out. And the parents pulled in the driveway. We turned everything off, and I went out in the living room. They're like, how'd everything go? I'm like, oh, it's pretty good. You know, I mean, and the kids came out and they ratted me out on everything. They were like, he let us have a food fight and blah, blah, blah. And we had a water balloon fight. And they're like, we don't have water balloons. And they're like, I know, he left to go get some. And the parents were looking at me like I was the devil, and I was the devil. I was a horrible, horrible babysitter. And they said they were going to discuss, like what was going to happen next and what the payment was going to be. And I was like, well, let me take my stuff out. And I went out and got on my motorcycle and left. I didn't even get paid. I was like, I do not deserve to get paid for this tragedy of a babysitting night. It was terrible, you know? And
did they call your parents?
No, I don't think they knew my parents, because they knew my buddy's parents, which is, you know, how I had got the job. So they didn't know my parents, which was probably really good for me. But I just remember that feeling of like wanting to be these kids' buddy and wanting them to like me. And when it was bedtime, I should have been the one that was like, no, you can't do it. And now it's funny, because I have no problem with my children hating me every day. My kids are like, can I stay up 1 minute? I'm like, no, you go to bed now.
So I'm the same. My wife and I are the same way, man.
Yeah, but can't, I don't know. And maybe it's just a thing of being younger and not having the maturity to be able to take control of that situation, you know, but I was not a good babysitter.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a situation, but yeah, I never screwed up that bad like you.
See, for me, I'm fostering this right now. My best friend and his wife had a little baby girl 2 years ago, and I have been like sitting down. It's like, I just can't wait till I get a chance to be the cool uncle, because my friend, you know, he's a great guy and everything, but he's really like kind of, I don't know, like tight knit and he doesn't really watch a lot of like bad movies or anything like that. He's already talked about like how he's not going to let her watch, you know, anything but PG rated movies up until she's 17 and all this stuff. And it's like, I cannot wait. I've been thinking of ways that I can like get the babysitting gig. So when she's 4, I can show her the Monster Squad. When she's 5, I can show her Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'm already scouting for skateboards and stuff, and she's already 2. It's like I'm going to be a horrible influence on this kid.
Oh my god! Here's what you totally do: you start like a horror film podcast with her,
right? That would be amazing. Seriously,
you're like, so what do you think about Texas Chainsaw Massacre? She's like, I don't like the people. Oh god, I would listen to that every week. That would be awesome.
One of my favorite podcasts is a show called The Horror Etc. And there's an episode where one of the guys has his little daughter and shows her Star Wars for the first time when she's like 6. And they have this great conversation. It makes an amazing podcast. That's actually a brilliant idea. If I can only find a kid to
well, expose a bunch thing, of horror. Is that you probably won't be able to babysit her like every night or whatever.
So you get her
for the weekend and you have like a film festival. Like we're watching 12 horror movies. And then the advantage of that is when she goes home, she will not sleep for a week. She'll have the closet light on. She's just like shaking, you know, the people under the stairs, mommy. Like, what? God, that would be great.
Her parents, real quick, her parents bought her like a toy chainsaw recently, and I'm already teaching her all of Ash's catchphrases from Evil Dead.
Awesome. Yeah. You have to like hollow out a little thing where she can put her hand in it, you know, in the back.
Exactly.
In high school, one of the classes they offered us was tutoring, and you had to have your own transportation. But for an hour or 2 hours a day, you could drive over to the elementary school. And go tutor kids, you know, and I would go over, I drove over to the, elementary school that I had gone to, which was, you know, totally weird at the time anyway. I was like, I haven't been here in 10 years, you know, and there was a kid and this was, 89, 90, right in there, you know, and so I'm like right at the peak of, skateboarding, like maybe on the cusp end of the skateboarding. And I go over and this kid and his buddies are all skateboarders and they're like third and fourth graders. And, they're like, yeah, we're building a launch ramp this weekend. And I'm like, oh God, where do you guys live? And, I was like, you know, I was trying to intentionally do this thing. Like I could show them that, you know, if you stay in school and you do all this stuff, then you could still be cool, you know. And I was going to go over to their house and I remember going out to my car and thinking, this is weird. Like I just stopped and I was like, I'm going to go hang out with some third and like, what if their parents come out and they're like, who are you, guy in car who's skateboarding with our children? And I didn't go over there. I made up some excuse, but I thought, you know, so maybe I did learn later. I learned the lesson from the babysitting gig, but I thought, you know, you should probably, this is a good age to stop palling around with 8-year-olds.
Rob's like, sorry guys, I can't hang out. I gotta go pick up my girlfriend at the junior high right now.
Right. Yeah. You might know her. She's pregnant. Right. I have to get her away from the teacher. I'm going to rescue her. She's cooking bacon for Coach Pierce right now, but I'm going to take her away from all this.
Oh my goodness.
Everybody right now is listening to this is hiding their children from me. They're like, you are never working in this town again. Did you guys have any favorite quotes from this movie?
Pretty much everything that comes out of Chainsaw's mouth.
God, he was great. Yeah.
I love the mini reviews that they do of everything. When him and Dave, you know, they're on a roller coaster, they have to do a review of the roller coaster. Like, my favorite is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie review. It had passion and a plucky spirit. The characters had integrity. Like when Leatherface went on that strict diet of human flesh and cut out all the chicken and fish completely.
Right. One of their wishes is that they will watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the class, which happens.
Yeah.
So yeah, they do that review of it. I did not see, this movie or hadn't heard of this movie, but there's a, right before they take the test, a chainsaw just screams in the middle of the room and everybody looks at him and then he goes, tension breaker. had to be done. I know I heard people in high school do that or say that. So obviously there were people watching this movie. It just didn't happen to be me, but, yeah. So that definitely, I remember that from real life. And then I think, Sean, I think you mentioned that my other favorite line when you know, the parents are coming in and they're talking to the principal about Shoop, and, Chainsaw's father is talking about what a disappointment Chainsaw is, and then he looks at him and goes, you know, because of him, we quit having kids. And he just has this crushed look on his face, you know?
Yep. That's good stuff.
And another one was when Shoop said that the alcohol was his, and he got arrested, and he's on his roller skates, and they're pushing him into the cell, and he wants like a cell for beginners, and there's like all these like rough biker dudes and everything, and you hear like some guy just say "roller boogie boy," and I don't know, it's just always stood in my head on, because I just remember watching it going, oh my god, this guy's in trouble.
Do you think if you got arrested wearing roller skates that you would still have those on in jail?
Probably not.
That seemed like cruel and unusual punishment right there.
Yep. He's definitely going to be the catcher in that relationship.
Yeah, I think so. Well, unless he's good on the roller skates, maybe he can like just go in laps around the little cell. I apparently this had a hoppin' 80s soundtrack with a bunch of songs that I've really never heard of. But let's see. We had... I'm looking down through the list here. Of course, it said music by Danny Elfman, and we know Danny Elfman from lots and lots of things. And then there was a song from E.G. Daily. And you know what? I honestly, and maybe even before we did this podcast, the only thing I knew E.G. Daily from was as Dottie from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. I had no idea that she did all these different, you know, 80s songs and all these songs of hers that ended up on, you know, movie soundtracks. And she performs in Better Off Dead, and she has the songs on there, you know, and the was it the prom that they go to? Better Off, yeah.
Yeah, it's a dance, yeah.
Yeah, the dance thing. And you know, as you look through her soundtrack or her, you know, songography, I guess, yeah, she just is on all these, different things. Well, she's on this soundtrack twice. And then I see, Fabulous Thunderbirds. I don't really recognize any of these other people, but is there any music that struck out, for you guys?
Not for me.
Yeah, no, honestly, I'm a really big fan of E.G. Daily. And for me, the best song on the soundtrack is the Mind Over Matter. It's the test taking montage song at the very end. That's hers. And I'd also like to throw out that she's also Tommy Pickles on the Rugrats, which is just strange.
That is true. That is true. Yeah, she's another one that did a lot of voice work and stuff. And God, I'm glad we didn't. I'm glad we didn't throw her in the mix, because I would take her over Kirstie Alley
In a heartbeat. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, one thing that we do talk about on this show is, we call it, cultural impact. We go through and we look at eBay auctions. Good luck on this one. There were no summer school action figures, puppets, t-shirts, collectibles. Basically you can find the VHS copy, the DVD copy, or the DVD special edition copy. That's pretty much, what I found on there, on eBay. There is a, I did see, I don't know if you guys noticed this, the original release on the cover has Shoop and his dog, Wonder Mutt. And then there's a later one, the Life's a Beach edition, which they have added, Courtney Thorne Smith, which I'm sure this is because of her, you know, fame now, that they added her to, the cover, and Kirstie Alley. But, yeah, there wasn't a lot of stuff out there. I did find a review where, Roger Ebert gave this 1.5 out of 4 stars.
Nice.
I think I liked it better than that. I don't know. What would you guys give it?
Well, for me, it's a 3.5-star movie. I mean, it's not quite like a 4 or a 5 or whatever, but it's one of those ones that I saw so many times that I don't know. I don't know if it's just the rose tinted glasses or the nostalgia or whatever, but I love this film.
Yeah, I definitely give it better than 1 out of 4. I wouldn't say I love it.
No. 1.5 out of 4. He didn't even give it 1.
To be fair, Roger Ebert, I mean, one of my favorite films of all time is Harold and Maude, and I think Roger Ebert gave that like a 1.
Oh, really?
Which is insane because that movie is a classic. So
I love that movie.
He's not always spot on. I'm not saying summer school is Harold and Maude, but
it's better than a half.
Yeah, exactly.
Harold and Maude has fake death scenes, correct?
Yep. Many.
Summer School has fake death scenes.
It does. It has a spring winter romance.
Right. Maybe that's what Roger Ebert doesn't like. He's like, anything with fake death scenes, he's out.
I still have to watch that.
You haven't seen that?
No. And after I listened to Sean and the rest of the Cult Film Club podcast talk about it, it's in the Netflix queue, or it was. I don't know unless it took it off by now, but I do need to watch that movie.
Definitely, you need to watch it. And if you think a 16-year-old cooking dinner for a 30-year-old is weird, wait until you see Harold and Maude.
Yeah. All I can say is I was turned on to the movie by the one and only Henry Rollins, who can't speak its praises enough. So if you dig Black Flag or punk or anything like that, just know that he's a huge fan. So
it is a good movie. And you know what? I'm sure I saw that from the old HBO days. So I don't know how you missed it.
No, but I like this movie, and I like the fact that it didn't have that ending where everyone passes. I like the fact that Shoup really could give a shit about teaching these kids. You know, he's just trying to get to keep his job.
Right.
You know, basically. Tenure. Yeah. And not until I think the very end does he realize that they all kind of did something together, not passing, but, you know, like he says, they put the effort. They've come a long way. I wouldn't want like they all passed and stuff like that. I thought it was a fun movie. A lot of goofy, odd scenes in this film, but it was fun. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know how I would have felt about it if I were in your shoes, Rob, if I had never seen it before. But like Sean, I remember many times during the summer vacation, when I wasn't in summer school, watching this movie.
You know what? I thought it was okay. I thought it was a goofy 80s movie. I thought the tone for me was kind of all over the place, you know, like we talked about. I mean, it goes from comedy to serious back and forth. So that was a little jarring. Some of the scenes now, you know, and I think like, you know, when you're a kid in the 80s, you're 12, 13, and you see 15 and 16 year olds drinking, you think that's what 15 and 16 year olds do. You know, I mean, I knew that there were older kids that did things like that, but then watching it now for the first time as an adult, I'm like, where are these children's parents? You know, this school system is failing terribly. But once you leave the reality out of it and you just look at it as a movie, you know, I thought it was okay. And like you said, Sean, I think the ending, does it justice, you know, because it's not realistic that this girl that has dyslexia and can't read is going to come in and get a 70% on a test, you know, or one girl who says that it's grounds for a retake if you have a baby during the final. That's a valid point. I thought it was okay. I thought it was enjoyable. I don't know how many more times I would watch it. I mean, I'm not like dying to watch it again right now, but I might watch it again in the future.
Well, I know I'm definitely going to watch it again to try to check out that volleyball.
Yeah, it's definitely in the beginning. I think it's on the first day of class or something that you notice that part.
Oh, when she hits the ball?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that. And then, like I said, that end scene where they're on the beach and they're all like standing around looking at each other. And I mean, the only thing that's in that shot is all those kids on a stool right there or a chair with the volleyball on it. And it's right next to her. And to me, it's like she pulled it out, set it there, and they said, action.
Yeah. They're like, wait, no, you're supposed to have already had the baby. Right, she's just like, okay. The baby. Boop. Puts it right next to her. you're on a beach. Nobody will notice.
I was going to say, you know, watching back through this, one of the things that I do on my website is I go through and I find awesome bedrooms and I kind of dissect them and try to look for all the cool stuff that was in the background. And I had totally forgotten that there were scenes in this with Chainsaw's bedroom. So I'm glad you guys got me to pop this in the DVD player. So I might have to check that out.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, there's the, that whole thing where it's like right, maybe is it right before the test?
Oh, where he has that, yeah, the dream sequence?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
What was the dream about? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm glad we watched it. Like I said, I forgot about this movie until, you know, I kept seeing Mark Harmon on Battle Network Stars. And he's been on so much stuff too.
I know he's huge on Saint Elsewhere. And I, you know what? I wasn't a big Saint Elsewhere fan. I think that was a little bit before me as far as TV drama went, but, I guess he was the doctor that got AIDS.
Yeah.
And I do remember that plot line at the time. I remember that was very controversial, you know?
Yeah, for me as a kid, he was the doctor that got AIDS on St. Elsewhere and Ted Bundy. He did like a Ted Bundy biopic on like a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah, yeah, I read about that. I haven't seen that, which is odd because it's totally right up my alley. But but yeah, so yeah, so I guess my last question to you guys would be: would you recommend this to somebody else that hasn't seen it before?
I guess probably like my answer to The Incredible Shrinking Woman is, I don't know, I guess if it's on and you're not doing anything, I wouldn't tell anybody to go out of their way to watch it unless they're planning on recording a podcast about it.
I'd say like if they were a fan of the John Hughes stuff and they were looking for more stuff that kind of hits on that level, like stuff like Just One of the Guys or some of the lesser known, you know, you throughout Back to School and stuff like that, some of the stuff that's a little wackier and a little, you know, a little bit more obscure, then definitely check it out if they haven't seen it. But if, you know, if they get their fix from just John Hughes or whatever, then yeah, probably they could probably pass on it.
Well, I think that's going to wrap up our summer school episode. Unless you gentlemen have anything else you want to add.
I think I'm good. I'm glad. I don't know. This kind of makes me want to go to summer school now. Like I thought summer school didn't sound very good until I saw this. And now I'll have, you know, just hot chicks and teachers granting me wishes. Now I wish I'd have been in summer school.
You didn't miss much. Didn't miss much at all. Well, Sean, thanks again for coming on.
Oh, no, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, why don't you give out some plugs for all the stuff you got going on?
Sure, yeah. We just started up the Cult Film Club again. We're doing our second season of that. We try to hit one episode a month. We just did The Last Dragon, and we've got an episode that should be dropping in the next day or so about the 1994 Russell Mulcahy Shadow movie. And then, you know, I'm always over at Branded in the 80s talking about a bunch of 80s junk. So if you like 80s toys and or kids junk from the 80s, it's a good place to go find out about some stuff, I guess.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely check out his website, podcast, The Last Dragon. That was a great episode, too.
So thanks.
I'm waiting for you to come out with another
show
one.
Show enough, it was.
Yep.
Yeah, show enough. And, Rob, what about you?
Not much. I'm just, trying to get back in the swing of podcasting. Last week I did, two episodes of You Don't Know Flack and one episode of Sprite Castle. And, got another, Sprite Castle probably set to go this weekend. And then I'll probably end up doing another You Don't Know Flack when I get back. So just trying to get the train rolling again.
You going to keep the food segment in?
You know what? I got more feedback on that than any other thing I've ever done. I mean, people are very concerned that I would, if you don't listen to You Don't Know Flack, I do a short segment called Talking Snack.
Sprite Castle.
On Sprite Castle, right, where I basically mention a food that because I come upstairs and I podcast, and so I'm like, oh, I'll get a food that goes with whatever the topic of the game I'm talking about. So, when I did, Bruce Lee, I had sushi. And when I did, let's see, when I had Winter Games, Was that what it was? There's an event in Winter Games called Hot Dog. So I ordered a hot dog and I got onion rings and I placed them like the Olympic rings. So it's a very silly, dumb segment. And, I thought, you know what? This is taking away from talking about the games. So, I made a off the hand comment on the last episode and I said, you know, if you want this to stay in, you better let me know because I'm about to cut this segment out. And people came out and drove, Sean. People love the food segment. Nobody said keep talking about games. or your other podcast or anything like that. Really, they just said save the food segment.
So are we possibly going to getting another podcast?
I'll just talk about things that, like, this is like how I stay fat. It'll just be a list of things I eat for, and I might eat them in real time on the show. Like, I'll just, like, it'll be an hour of me eating. I should probably do it on YouTube. I think that would be better. So yeah, that'll be another part. And you know what? That's really a podcast because I eat already. So I could like squeeze that into my schedule. I just, would just have to have a camera, you know, but,
Have you ever seen the Korean guy eating on YouTube videos?
No.
No. Okay. I'll send you one afterwards. Maybe you can use that as a format.
All right. Yeah. I'm looking, so we're going to expand the network. So that'll be, and it'll be retro. I'll only eat like stale and old things. Like retro bread.
30-year-old
like
cereal.
Old Twinkies. Exactly. Yes. I'll just leave things out. Like I'll, you know, only milk past the expiry date. And
well, the antique store I was at yesterday had a old Coke bottle from the 80s with Coke still in it. So I could send that down too.
There you go. That'll be the first thing. So it'll just be, you know, me eating old things and then having the dry heaves. So I don't know what ratings are going to be for this show.
I don't, they won't be dry heaves. I don't think
it's a niche. It's a niche market, but, somebody out there is waiting for that show.
Yeah. A very special episode where you visit the hospital.
Right. And then it's like me just taking selfies with my phone the whole time. Like, oh, welcome back to my show. It's terrible.
Well, all right. We look forward to your new podcast then.
All right.
See it on throwbacknetwork.net.
You Don't Know Mold is my new show.
All right. Well, another episode is in the can. I think our recording schedule has been really messed up. So I'm thinking that we're going to have Children of the Corn come out after this, even though we recorded it about a month and a half ago. It should be our next episode, but I don't know. I think I said that last week too. So we'll see what happens. You'll see it on the Twitters and Facebooks and all that stuff in the feed. So until next time, thanks for listening. If you'd like to contact the show, you can send an email to feedback@throwbackreviews.com or call 716-243-2709 and leave a voicemail. You can also find us on Facebook, we're Throwback Reviews Podcast, or on Twitter at Throwback Review. Don't forget to head over to the Throwback Network where you can find more great retro-themed podcasts. Go to throwbacknetwork.net. And as always, thanks to Pixelate for the intro and closing music. Find more of his music at soundcloud.com/peachypixel8.